Tocco homie, it's up here, Padilla, Nakia homie. Not be a Padilla homie, Longsokito homie. Number one, sir, to come on if up. Number one, sir, to come on if up. Now that we have completed another session of sitting meditation, we hope that we gain more clarity, patience, kindness, resilience, and alignment with the Dharma and our Buddha nature, that we're growing together as one family in one unit. And with that being said, we'll continue with the Dharma lesson for today that we're all sharing. And this Dharma lesson today, at the current moment, is coming all the way from a place called Meirim, which is Chiang Mai, Thailand. I was at this monastery. It was on a riverbank. So you'd have the monastery here, and the riverbank was here. But one year, it was the highest it ever overflowed. A lot of rainfall. It's in the middle of a valley. So the water almost came up towards, close to actually coming and seeking up on inside of the temple. So you had to walk downstairs to get to the riverbank, but this year it exponentially rose super high. And I used to always go down and watch, and it was, you know, not much else to do. So, you know, so we used to go there and just stare at the water, how high it got, in amazement, and it had so much sludge and mud, you know, it's coming from the mountain. All of the rice fields were completely just filled, as high as it ever, just brown, thick mud all over the place. So that's what gave birth to this poem. And it made me think about the body and how it kind of works. It made me reflect upon my own self, my body, and how to cleanse the self of all of these corrosions that are inside of the heart and mind. And the poem is about a young lady that was walking on her way, and she came across an elder man that was soaking in his tears. He was at the riverbank, he was soaking in his tears, crying to himself about whatever it was. And she went near him and she was like, you know, can I, you know, kind sir, can I help you? You seem to be in a state of, you know, affairs. Is there anything I can do for you? And the older man, he told her, what you can do is go to the end of the riverbank before the dam is open and tell me what you see. Tell me what you see and come back. So she takes a walk to the riverbed, the dam before it opens, takes a look, and she said, it was dry, filled with old trash and garbage. The mud was thick and had a very pungent smell. She said she didn't understand how anyone saw such beauty in such an ugly and foul place. And when she reported that back to the man, the older man, she told her exactly what she saw. So the next day she comes around and she sees the same old man crying, soaking his shirt, soaking in tears. She's like, is there anything I can do for you today? I see you soaking in your tears. And the old man tells her, go up to the top of the riverbank after the dam has been released and tell me what you see. So she goes there and she says, she saw clean water, no more garbage, no more filth. The strength of the water dam that has been released had washed away all the trash, all the filth. The river became crystal clear, almost like you could see the skies in the water, the reflection of the sky of the water. Wildlife started to grow back. The trees started to flourish. The fish were inside the water. It was a beautiful place. There was no foul smell. It was like a brand new river. It was like a brand new life had reappeared. And when she told that to the old man, he smiled and he continued on his way. So the third day, the lady saw the man hunched over, soaking the floor with his thoughts and his tears, rolling down his cheek all the way down to his chest. No questions asked, nor was there any inquiry. She came near, sat close, gently held his arm, placed her head upon his cheek, grabbed his hand, and they sat and they wept together. So this poem is talking about how sincerity, the tears of sincerity, not regret, not the tears of remorse, not the tears of emotion, but the tears of happiness is what gets rid of the old crustaceans of the heart and the mind. These are tears of joy. These are tears of equanimity, the tears that I could be doing something else and I'm not. I could be out there causing chaos, causing confusion, spreading ignorance, spreading falsehood, but I'm not. I'm doing the right thing, and I know I'm doing the right thing. I'm being with the righteous. I'm a living example of that testimony. And that's what caused these tears to flow down the old man's face. When she realized that, she sat down and said, "Yeah, now I understand." It is that what breaks down the heart. It is that what makes you connected to the Dharma. So that is the poem that I received from watching the river overflow in the temple. I was always under the impression that tears are something that is frowned upon until I watched the riverbank overflow. And I learned that sincerity is going to cause them tears to your riverbank to overflow. And that's a good thing. It should be something that is honored and valued. When you start to have breakthroughs in your practice, breakthrough in your meditation, it's going to come. It's destined to come. You don't have to tell anybody about it, but you use that for fuel to keep you motivated. It's fuel for you to keep you motivated on the path. It's you realizing that there has been significant changes to your accepting and accepting the Dharma and the truth as it is without adulterations or additions. It's telling you, regardless of age or whatever notion people have, that changes you can develop. Regardless of age, race, or anything else, development can always happen at any time. The bodhicitta, the bodhidharma can, just in a heartbeat, just in a second, change your life. And it should make you more compassionate to other people who are struggling. Does it make you better? It doesn't. Does it make you better? Does it make them worse? It makes you more compassionate. makes you have more mercy for them. Most of these stories and poems that I write about are about these silent sages, these sage-like entities that are teaching us these lessons. They're not necessarily monks or nuns. They're just life lessons that actually are your guardian, your guardian angel, as you want to say it. But you have to see it with sincerity, clarity, and the development of wisdom that you're learning. With your concentration, the development of your practice. Did you like the poem? Okay, good. Just checking. Just making sure. Thanks, man. So, the other poem, where is it here? Let me make sure I got it up on the screen here. Oh, there we go. The strange thing that I've witnessed inside the pagodas and the temples is that although Buddhism calls for the eradication of ego, the eradication of this citta, right? This eradication of ego, right? It calls people who are the egotistical, the narcissists, they come. It's the craziest thing ever, right? Because maybe they're in a piece of a corner in their life where they realize that they have this problem and they want to get it fixed. So what do? They come all to the temple. All right, it's the weirdest. But so you see a lot of interactions with people and you find out that newcomers that come, a lot of them are looking for position. They're looking for status. They're looking for some type of name, to make a name for themselves. They're always looking and grasping after some type of recognition. They have to argue. When the practice is low, arguments happen a lot. When the practice is low, you'll find people always arguing and bickering amongst each other. That's the sad part. The more practice you have, the more practice a person has, the quieter he gets, the more reclusive he becomes. But the lighter his presence is, meaning when he comes around, it's like, whoa, who is that guy right there? It's like he lit up an entire room and he didn't say one word. When she walks by, it's just like all of the flowers all at once let go of all of their fragrance. And all she did was walk by, the nun she walks by. I was in Bangkok the first time, Khao San Road, hello. I just got to Thailand. This is a huge party street. Huge party street. My first time in Thailand, music is pumping, it's nighttime. People are doing what people on Party Street does. Wild. At the end of the Party Street is a really huge temple. It's a meditation temple. Right? People go there. It's packed. Thousands of people just on the road. There was one nun, all white, bald head. She started to walk down the street trying to get to the temple. I kid you not, it was like the parting of the Sea of Moses. I swear to you, it was the craziest thing I've ever seen in my life. She didn't say one word, not a, excuse me, sir. No, none of that. She walked with her full commitment. The street went whoosh, just opened, and everyone was like, we just stared at her, but it was like she commanded our soul to give her reverence. That's how strong her presence was. Little young, Maybe she could have been about maybe in her mid-30s. She was barefoot. She was barefoot. And she had no hair, wearing on white, and she just walked. And everybody just was like, you saw people, Brits, these other Brits and the Australians were like, get back. They're like, get back. And they were just like, just staring at her. But not like she was weird. It was just like, are you guys seeing what I'm seeing here? So, this next poem, it's 11:26. I'll try to make this one quick. This next poem is talking about ignorance, pride, and awakening. Let's go ahead and start this one here. We can continue on. Are you guys okay with that? Yeah? You guys okay on the left? Yeah? This poem came about when I was unwilling to call what it is I was facing exactly what it was: delusion. Wanting what was not there to be what I wanted it to be, but not accepting it for what it was. And I had a little help clear my vision. There once was a blind man. He couldn't see where he wished to go. He felt along the path with his hands, believed he already knew all the way, all the paths, believed he already knew all that he touched. He believed everything that he knew already. Everything he touched, he thought he knew. One day, he crossed a large fallen tree. He brushed his fingers along the trunk. "This tree is huge," he said. "If it had fallen while I passed, it would have crushed me." Just then a little bird sang from above. "Oh, blind man," it chirped. "Not everything you touch is what you think. Some things, if misunderstood, will bring you despair. Please be mindful. Please be aware." The blind man scoffed. "What noise is that? I know what I'm touching. I've walked this path for years. I didn't ask you, little bird. Be gone with your nonsense." And with pride, he moved on. Soon he stepped into the marshy puddle, the water cool and rise to his ankles. He reached down and grasped a heavy lotus flower floating just beside him. Again, the little bird chirped out and said, "Oh, blind man, be careful what you carry. If you could see what I see, you'd tremble. Not all beauty is what it seems. Some things, once held too tightly, can pull you under." "Mind your own business," the man growled. "This is a lotus, my favorite. I've cherished it daily. There's nothing on this path that I haven't touched. Don't insult what I love." The bird, wise and soft-hearted, was moved by compassion and concern. "Let me land on your shoulder," it said. "Let me show you what I see. Perhaps together we'll better understand." He said, no problem. And so the bird perched gently on his shoulder and wiped clean the man's thick glasses. So stained he'd forgotten sight was ever possible. That's how thick his glasses were. What he saw left him breathless. Tears spilled freely from his eyes. The tree I leaned on wasn't a tree at all. It was a crocodile sleeping, and still, thank heavens, it wasn't hungry. Brushing his hands against this tree was nothing but a crocodile ready to tear him limb to limb. The puddle was not mere water, and the lotus, a coiled venomous snake, its head caught in a fishing line, too weak to strike. "O sweet bird," he whispered, "how foolish I was. Believing what I wanted to be true, you tried to warn me, but I was too proud to listen. I bow deeply to your kindness. You have opened my eyes. From this day on, walk with me and guide me, and help me unlearn what I thought I knew. For sometimes I love my thoughts too much, and they lead me into danger." That is the end of the poem. So what happened was, I was stuck in this mood where I was too afraid to open myself up to take advice from others. Because for whatever reason, we had some type of conflict, so I didn't want to hear anything they had to say. And I had to show that I'm hyper independent and I can do things my own way and get the results. But what had happened was, I was killing myself at the same time. Instead of actually understanding what was happening at the present moment that I could reflect on, I was actually destroying myself and distorting the harmony of that place. So the young bird was actually a friend of mine that was telling me, "You knew before you stepped in here what was going on, but you didn't want to say, you didn't want to accept what was going on. You wanted to believe what was untrue. So let me remind you with compassion." They were very compassionate. They were very kind to help me clear my understanding so I can accept and still see the Dharma that was supposed to be leading me out of confusion, frustration, anguish, blindness. And we know that, as we see here, pride is a form of blindness linked to what is called mana. Mana in Pali language is conceit, conceitedness, and it blocks learning. Mana is always followed by avicca. Avicca is ignorance, but a deep-seated ignorance. So this conceit leads to ignorance. It leads to all of the other poisons of the heart. How can you have something pure like the Dharma rest inside your heart when you think that you're better than someone else, or you're more pure or righteous than someone else? Because that just creates a system where hatred is going to be forming right after that. It's coming. "You don't want to listen to you. Don't sit by me. I don't want to eat next to you." That's hatred. You have to see it for what it is. The lotus and the snake, however, it can be tanha and vipalasa, craving and distorted perception. Got this blind man talking, "Oh, this is a flower, and I'm grabbing it." No, it's not. This is not a poison vine. You think it's a snake, but you're lucky it's still stuck in this wire. It's going to destroy you. That was my distorted perception, grabbing onto things, thinking they're going to lead me to prosperity. What? The thoughts in my mind. The made-up stories in my mind. The bird symbolizes the Kalyana Metta, which is your compassionate or your Dharma friend. That represents your spiritual guide, your Dharma companion, your noble companion. They don't get mad at you. They have more compassion. They're trying to show you the way forward with love and compassion. They don't want to see you destroyed. They want to see you prosperous. That's your real Dharma partner. They're gentle. The cleansing of the glass is symbolic of the development of wisdom. Development of panya, how it actually penetrates the heart, changes the actions, changes your speech. The blinding touch, the blind touching, you know, this is what you would consider conceptual knowledge, while seeing is experiential awakening.